Yeah, I mean, like I said before, teachers don't make a ton of money, but they're not in it for the money. They're in it to help people. I would say like 95% of teachers fit that characteristic. And when we hear from, like, I still hear from former students that I had sometimes 10, 20 years ago, and it just makes my day when I hear from former students.
Welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today, I have the honor to learn from Dominique, or otherwise known as Dr. P. Dr. P is a Harvard graduate who went on to teach at many elite public and private schools. After some conflict, she decided to start Crimson Coaching, which helps individuals in the college application process. Dr. P helps students improve their SAT scores, essays, and provides many more services to help students stand out in the college admissions process. She also helps them while they are in school. This conversation that I had with Dr. P was awesome, to say the least. It was just so much information that I definitely benefit from this stage of life that I'm in right now. So it was really resonated with me. And it also was fun to just kind of hear her side and story of how life at times, although we want it to be step by step by step, it is not true. It is a path, and you kind of take the path that you want. I don't want to spoil any of the rest of the show. This was a really great episode. So without further ado, let's welcome Dr. P to the show. Hi, Dominique. I'm Josh.
Hi.
I'm very excited to learn. I'll just get right to it. There's three kind of goals that I have with this podcast. Number one, I try to keep the audience in mind, hear what, the questions they may have. Then number two, I want you to have a great experience. Then the third, and this is kind of my selfish reason, I just get to learn from fascinating people. So that's a plus. So that's why I do it.
That's awesome. Can I ask what your business itself is? I'll admit I didn't do that much research before this. So like, what do you do? Is this your thing, a business?
It's not a business, but it's kind of a passion project. So what I also do is I have a window cleaning company, and that's kind of what I do to fund all this. I do that. So like probably right after this, I'll get right to that. This is kind of a passion project of mine. But
that's cool. And where are you? You're in Denver?
Utah. So just one state over in the Salt Lake area.
Oh, nice.
So are you based in New York then?
I am in Long Island in the suburbs.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. My sister's actually going to school in Pace University. I don't know if you.
My cousin went there. The one in Manhattan or the one in Westchester?
The one in Manhattan. So that was her dream. She's just like, I want to go out there and do it. So I'm like, props to you.
Like, and did you guys grow up in the Salt Lake area?
Yeah, we grew up in the Salt Lake area. So
that's a big change. Wow. How's she doing?
Good since last time I talked to her, which has been a while. Probably should do that.
That's but brave.
Yeah, no, it's what she wants to do. So
awesome.
It's fun. But I guess let's kind of dive into what you do. I want to hear what it is you do. And I know you tutor people to kind of get into schools and try and kind of pursue their dreams. And I'll admit, at first, I kind of, when I was like, oh man, college admissions, for the record, I haven't gone to school. I'm thinking about it. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
But
totally.
At first I was like, oh man, we might like butt heads. But then as I saw some of your stuff, I was like, oh, wait, like, we actually probably agree on a lot.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I don't come from a very academic family, right? There's some people, well, I should say a lot of people, especially back when I was applying to school, almost 35 years ago now, they came from generations of people that went to college and even generations of people who went to Harvard. And so I'm not from a family like that. My dad was a New York City police officer. I can tell you that when I looked at his high school transcript and saw some of his grades, I was like, is that number out of 100? Are you? You would not mind me telling you that. My mom did attend FIT, which is Fashion Institute of Technologies, which today is a four-year school, but back in the day, it was a two-year school, and very much a trade school for people who are going into pattern making or other aspects of the needle trades. But my parents always encouraged their kids to do well in school. And so, you know, my brother, sister, and I all went on to college. So
that's cool. So tell me the story about like how you, I guess, kind of came about of wanting to go into an Ivy League school. I don't want to judge or anything, but like just given the background, the story you kind of shared there, it's like, you know what? I think I can get into Harvard. Like that wouldn't cross my mind if I was in your circumstances.
And it's, you know, and it's true. My high school was the type of high school where, you know, third of the kids didn't go to any type of college or they went to the military. A third of the kids went to the local community college. And a third of the kids did go to four-year schools, but they generally went to SUNY's, which is State University of New York. I was always a little bit of a fish out of water where I grew up, though. I kind of marched to the beat of my own drummer. So when I was about 16, I actually thought I wanted to go to an art school because I loved art. My mother had been to a fashion school. But then as I got a little older, I thought, you know, maybe I should do a little bit more of an academic route. I thought maybe I'd want to be a lawyer. And no girl had ever gone to Harvard before me. My guidance counselor said, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so the year before you got rejected and their SAT score was higher than yours. So, you know, you really shouldn't get your heart set on it. But I thought, you know, I knew I was a valedictorian of a very large public high school. I had done very well in school and on AP exams, pretty well on my SAT. And I thought, you know what, I'll just try it. And I did try it and they took me. So I was like, okay, great.
That's awesome.
It's funny because I was so clueless as a 17-year-old. I applied to two other places. I applied to Stanford because its deadline was before I would find out from Harvard. And I applied to Columbia, which is in New York. And I thought, financial aid would be better. It was the same as Harvard. But I got accepted to all three. And when the acceptance to Stanford came, I thought I would be going to school on the beach in California. So I told my parents I wanted to go there. And my dad didn't want me to go so far away. So he said, well, if you're going there, you're going to get one plane ticket there and one plane ticket home. Don't think you're coming home on Thanksgiving and Easter and all these other holidays because we can't afford it. So I'm close to my family. So that kind of said, oh, I could take the bus home from Harvard. I'll do that.
Yeah, that's cool, though. That's so cool. Man, I can tell you, being here on the West Coast, though, the beach is nice. But, and I understand the impact, right, that family can have on those decisions too, and like going forward with it. So I guess now, right, I'm going to kind of do a quick blurb here because I really want to get to the good stuff. But I know you then went to school, became a teacher, then didn't you go back to school? And then now you started your own company that helps students kind of pursue their dreams, academic dreams. Am I kind of hitting that right?
Exactly. I mean, I'm really glad that I had about off and on between before my PhD and then after my PhD, I had a total of about 10 years teaching school full time. And I would say for any of your listeners who don't know what they want to do when they grow up or get out of college, I want to tell them that's totally okay. Because when I got out of Harvard, you know, I didn't have a family that went to college. So I didn't know what I could do. And I really, for 4 years, I had so many different kinds of jobs between working in a bank, as an assistant to a big executive, working as a paralegal. I tried freelance photography. And then about 4 years later, my mom said, you know, you've always tutored. Why don't you try teaching? And I enrolled in a local master's in education program. And the first time I stepped foot in front of a classroom, I was like, oh, this is why God put me on the earth. You know, this is really what I'm supposed to do. And I went for a PhD because I thought I would want to teach college. And I do teach college part time now. But after that 10 years of teaching, I think I was a really good teacher, but I'm also a woman who has a Harvard degree and a PhD. And frankly, that can intimidate some bosses. And my final boss at the final place I was teaching full time, we had some conflicts, and I wasn't fired on the spot. I mean, I was allowed to finish out my second year, but I wasn't asked back for a third year. And so at that point, I just said, you know what? I'm 42 years old. I've always tutored on the side to make extra money. Mm-hmm. Teachers don't make that much money. Why don't I just see if I can make this a full-time gig? And that was almost 10 years ago to the day that I did that. So that's what I've been doing for the last 10.
That is, and that's what's so cool, I think, is, right, like, I love how you shared there that you kind of thought, hey, I'm going to kind of be a lawyer, but then, right, something else new, teaching. And then you kind of went down that path. Then, right, some conflict came up, didn't really want to do that. And then you're like, wait, but I have this other thing that I'm doing. It's kind of going pretty well. Let's try this. And, right, kind of go down that path. And it kind of shows that no path is like linear. It's not a step-by-step, like do this, then this, then this. It's, hey, try some things out and see kind of what sticks on the wall. So now let's kind of dive into your practice.
Sure.
How does that process look like? Let's just start there. So like a student comes to you, I'm assuming high school student mostly, but do you get like maybe adults or other people as well?
I do. So generally, I would say, you know, 90% of the people who come to me are moms of high school students. The other 8% are maybe dads of high school students. And then maybe 2% are adults themselves who are going back to school, whether it's for the first time to get a bachelor's, or I recently had a student who was in a master's program, but he hadn't been in a serious academic program for over 30 years. And so he needed some help in terms of how to study, how to organize, and things like that. So, but yeah, the bulk of my practice is high school students who are either preparing for the SAT or ACT admissions exams, or writing their college application essays. But I still do some academic subject matter. So for example, I'm working with a student now in Florida who's preparing for the AP Human Geography exam. So it's kind of, that's sort of a fill-in throughout the year.
I mean, this is a weird side note. I actually took that exam.
How'd you do?
In high school. I got a 4, so.
Nice. It's a hard exam. I mean, this boy is a freshman, and I think it's a really tough exam to take as a ninth grader.
Yeah, that's actually the same year I took it as well, was ninth grade. I have to say, though, give credit to the teacher. The teacher was phenomenal, did an excellent job, and pretty much all I did was show up to class, and he did such a great job that I didn't even have to like worry about studying and things like that. That's just kind of how I learned too, is once I hear it or once I see it, especially, mm-hmm. It's like, all right, like it's stored in the back of my brain. Don't need to worry
about it.
That's
great. Have you ever written him an email to thank him for how much he prepared you? I'm sure he would love that.
I'm going to do that. That's actually a good idea. I should do that because, man, yeah, he was one of my favorite teachers and just, yeah, overall. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said before, teachers don't make a ton of money, but they're not in it for the money. They're in it to help people. I would say like 95% of teachers fit that characteristic. And when we hear from, like, I still hear from former students that I had sometimes 10, 20 years ago. And it just makes my day when I hear from former students.
Okay. No, I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm going to do that right after this ends, because I'm sure he'd love that.
Yeah.
But I will say this too. I also had some pretty terrible teachers that kind of really deterred me from subjects. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I hate this. And then it was actually starting this podcast that I'm like, especially math. I hated math. But then I actually had a guy on and I'm like, math's actually not that bad. It's kind of cool. It's just how it was presented in a high school setting to me. I was just like, dude, I hate this. Like, I hate this. And, but it kind of goes both ways.
You get that with every subject. What I always say is that if you take, 100% of the students, right, there are 10% that are going to love the subject no matter how bad of a teacher are, just because they love that subject, right?
Yeah.
And at the opposite end of the 10%, there are 10% that are going to hate the subject no matter how good you are, because for whatever reasons, they just don't like you. They don't like school. They're having emotional problems. But I think that the teacher plays, it like adds the most value to that 80% in the middle. And if you are an engaging teacher that cares about students and is good at your craft, you're going to sway that 80% with that first 10%. And if you're a terrible teacher, that 80% is going to go the other way.
And it can get out of control pretty quick, yeah. Too. I'll admit, I would be the one that would be pulling pranks. I admit it now. But to all my teachers, if they're listening to this, I'm sorry if you were wondering about some of those pranks they were probably me. But yeah, it was. But like, I agree to your point fully. Is the classes that I actually tended to enjoy quite a bit were the teachers that just love, like you could tell themselves that they loved what they were doing. And I even found it was the teachers that were willing to make you like almost, what's the right word? Like they would ask questions that would make you ask questions. It's like, wait, never thought of it like that. And then I would ask a question and you just, you get down a rabbit hole. And next thing you know, you just really love that subject. And you're like, well, I didn't even know.
Yeah, I mean, passion is underrated. I'll never forget when I was like 26 years old and in my very first job, which was very difficult. I was a leave replacement for a beloved teacher who had passed away after 25 years at that school. And the students were came from very wealthy backgrounds, and they had kind of ripped through 8 substitute teachers before me. And they all left. And I came in and it was my very first full-time gig. And I mean, I won't say it was easy, but I kind of began to win over the students. And I'll never forget, there was this one girl in the first row. I was talking about World War I. And she's like, it is so cute how into World War I you are.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, most 16-year-olds are not going to be into World War I, but if you're into it and you can help them see its impact on their life, then you might get them into it too.
That's cool. I think that's so cool. So this is kind of a question I have, and that's, so, right, high school is fun. You learn stuff, kind of. Man, okay. We went down a rabbit hole there with human geography, but I decided right after, I'm like, you know what? I'll start a podcast, start a window cleaning company, kind of see how that goes. And, now as I'm doing both of those, I'm like, I think I need some more skills. I need something, right? I kind of recognized doing it on my own, I can only get so far. I kind of need someone at some point to kind of guide me along the way. And so I kind of always feel weird though, like kind of going, cause I feel like I kind of missed my chance to just go to school. Right. You were supposed to go right after high school. And it's like, well, now what, like, how do you even navigate those waters?
It's never too late. I'll tell you, most people think, for example, like riding a bicycle is something you learn to do when you're a kid, right? Like how old were you when you learned how to ride a three-wheel bicycle?
Like, yeah, I can't even remember, like three,
yeah, two. Yeah, right. Well, I learned when I was 34 years old. I am a klutz and very double jointed. I broke a lot of bones as a kid. But I had a friend who's super into mountain biking, and he was like, "This is ridiculous. You can learn how to ride a bike." And he took me to a parking lot and he taught me how to ride a bike. So I always tell people when they think it's too late to do something, I'm like, if I could learn how to ride a bicycle at 34 years old, I could learn how to go to school. It really is. I mean, will it take perhaps more persistence, because now you have more responsibilities? Maybe you're paying rent and you have to work, and you know, your free time isn't all free, right? Like it was when you were a high school student. So you might have to study on your own for the SAT and things like that. But I really believe where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, there was a lady from, I think she was from Mississippi, old African-American lady. She was like 90 years old and she got her bachelor's degree because it was cool. A lifelong dream. I mean, so if she can do it, you definitely can do it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the encouragement. So, this is just kind of my thoughts because I just applied to the local area, but then I didn't really know what to do afterwards. It's like, okay, I applied and I kind of have a few areas I know I want to go into, but like, whereas I found like with the 18 year olds, right, they have high school counselors helping them, and there's like the admissions counts, they're helping them, and you're kind of stuck there and you're like, hey, like, can someone help me figure out a way, like what classes do I need to take, or right, things like that. So like, is there someone specific I need to reach out to, or
what? Well, I think there's two separate things, right? For once you're in the college, there are counselors and advisors in the college who can help you figure out what classes I need to take and that thing for my major, right? But before that, I mean, there's two ways. There are people like me who do this for a living, who help students apply. But there are also, I mean, for example, I have a YouTube and all my videos are free on, you know, college planning for 9th and 10th graders, applying to college one step at a time. And granted, most of those are intended for students who are already in high school, but there's no reason why someone like you can't, you know, go to youtube.com/crimsoncoaching. And watch, like, I have like 30 videos on different aspects of the application process. So again, you know, it's a little time consuming to do it on your own. But if you do put the effort in, like I always recommend for any big project like this to student, whether it's kids currently in high school trying to figure out where they want to go, I say try to devote a half hour a day to this goal, you know, whether it's writing a research paper or figuring out where you want to go to college. And if you can do something for a half hour a day, I think, you know, it's like a savings account. If you put in $10 a week, by the end of the year, you know, you'll have $520 plus interest, which is nice.
Yeah. It compounds over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is just a thought I had when you said YouTube. I've been using that just to figure stuff out. And I mean, it's cool that you have a page there as well. But I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts. Maybe what's the contrast between, because I think YouTube, you can kind of ask a question and kind of get the answer pretty quicker, I would say, than maybe taking a class. However, like what maybe kind of gives the class maybe the edge over just a YouTube video?
I think the fact that anybody and their grandmother can post a video to YouTube proclaiming to be an expert is the thing that you really want to watch out for, because nothing is sort of vetted. Versus, for example, if you know, I teach at City University of New York as an adjunct professor of history. You know, they verify that I have a PhD in history, that I have publications in history, that I like know what I'm talking about versus, you know, some guy in his basement who just watches the History Channel all day and may spout things that aren't actually true. So YouTube is a great tool, but I think you need to be really kind of an informed customer when you go to a place like YouTube to make sure that the folks who are talking there know what they're talking about. Another great resource for you and anybody applying to college is not created by me, although I've been a guest on this other podcast twice, is called Tests and the Rest. And it's a podcast run by two test prep coaches, but they have really top-notch guests who talk about all aspects of college admissions and testing. And even me, as someone who's been in the field for 30 years, I listen to them and I feel like I learn something new in every 20, 25-minute episode, which is, I think, pretty impressive. So I recommend that as a starting point, too.
Like use the tools is at your disposal, right? Like the internet's a great thing.
Yeah.
And could help you during those classes. But in terms of the quality, maybe of the information you're getting,
right?
The classes may be better. And yeah. I would also say this is just college as a whole, but one thing I've realized too is just peers. You have a lot more peers your age, around there, and just, you know, you meet more people doing cool things and are excited to learn what you're learning. Sometimes you'll share something cool you're doing with even just a family member and they're like, it's kind of cool, but I don't really care at the end of the day. And it's like, man, when you're talking about your stuff, I'm going to say the same thing. But
yeah, I mean, you know, the Frank Bruni, who's a reporter for the New York Times. I think he actually is a columnist. He wrote an article, I think it came out in 2018, where he says there are two important skills that students need to get out of college. And if they get these skills, it doesn't matter whether they go to their local community college or Harvard, they will be successful. And those skills are networking with peers and getting a mentor. Because the networking with peers, not only is it going to make your college experience more fun, it's also going to serve as a potential professional resource for you throughout your life. And the mentor doesn't have to be a professor or someone much older than you, per se. A mentor could even be somebody 2 years older than you who's already gone through exactly the steps that you've gone through and can kind of show you the ropes. And I have to say, you know, I was lucky in that I went to what, you know, a very famous, well-known college, and that has certainly opened doors for me. And I definitely did, I guess, the networking part. I didn't look at it as networking. I looked at it as more just having fun with other students, yeah. You know? I did not get a mentor because I was always embarrassed about going to office hours. I didn't think that my questions would be, I don't know, I didn't think I had anything to say to my professors. And I missed out on that opportunity. So I would say to, you know, anyone going to whatever college you're going to, definitely getting a mentor is an important part of the college experience.
That's good. So for a mentor, kind of, I guess, what, I mean, you mentioned office hours is a great way to find them. But what's another way you could find a mentor as well? Like what do you look for when looking for a mentor?
That's a great question. I always say start with office hours because those are, you know, required of the professor. I mean, they have to be there, right? And I'll tell you, as an adjunct professor, I've been teaching since the last week of January this semester, right? The first time any kids showed up for office hours was this past Wednesday because they have a final project due in a few weeks. And I'm actually getting paid for this office hour, and I just sit there and I respond to emails because nobody comes. So definitely show up to office hour. And I always tell students, if you feel a little weird about speaking to a professor one-on-one, bring a friend, bring two friends, you know, and then you can all get to know that person. Another potential mentor would be your advisor. Another potential mentor could be a coach of a sports team or the director of a show, like whatever your activity is, the person in charge of that. And then finally, again, it could be a student a year or two above you. So if you feel like you really hit it off with someone, and sometimes there are just other students. Like I remember going through school and being a younger student and be like, wow, that person really seems like they have their act together. I want to be like that person.
They probably didn't, right? everyone's trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, but they might have figured out just a little bit more than you because they are older. And that could really help you on your journey. Like I remember in high school, there was this girl, her name was Paula, and she dressed so cool and she was really smart, but I was always really intimidated. And I knew who she was, but I never talked to her. And she went to Vassar College, which is a private, it's not Ivy League, but it's a college, great college that most students didn't go to. And I think about now, oh, if I had just talked to her, maybe I would have been like less confused about applying to Harvard. So, you know, that's something I think that's important too.
Just ultimately be friendly, right, to everyone. Just, right, that might be the best policy. And yeah, maybe you stumble upon a mentor that can help guide you. And that, yeah, that's something I think we all need. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time. Thank you for sharing the knowledge you've shared today. If one quick thing though, if people want to reach out to you, get coaching from you, ask questions, whatever it may be, what's the best way that they can get a hold of you, all that fun stuff?
I will share that, but can I say one more thing about getting a mentor that I just thought about?
Go ahead.
I also think it's, and this is kind of straddles networking too. I will also say it's really important to lean in. And what I mean by that is like, so for example, for my 10th and 15th reunion from Harvard, I never went because I didn't have money. I was a poor graduate student, you know, making $12,000 a year. And everyone else who I felt was like making all this money. But you know what? I started to go back on my 20th, reconnected with people. And in my 25th reunion at Harvard is like a really big deal. And many people were there. And then after that, I started posting little videos about what I do on our class Facebook page. I have gotten so many business referrals and actual clients, either from my class or people they've referred me to. And if I had never gotten over feeling like shy and awkward about doing that, that number would have come to me. So I think also people, you know, if you want something to step out of your comfort zone a little bit, it can pay off. And then it gets easier every other time you do that. But that's my little spiel. So in order to
No, that's great. No, that's a great way to end it right there. And yeah, can we get now kind of your information?
Yeah, right? Sure. So the easiest way to get in touch with me is by either going to the contact page of my website, which is crimsoncoaching.com, or you can just email me directly at info@crimsoncoaching.com. And if you're not ready to, you know, make that step, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter at crimsoncoaching.com/newsletter, where, you know, I have every month I give a number of virtual and in-person talks, mostly virtual still though. So, you know, you can kind of get to know me safely, you know, with your camera turned off in the audience, if that feels safer for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Dominique, for coming on and sharing the knowledge and wisdom. I know I benefited, and I know the listeners did as well. So thank you for sharing the knowledge, which you did. All right, everyone, as you can tell, that is Dr. P. She's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything stood out to you, to reach out to her. I'm sure she'd be happy to help. And if you're interested in her services, she provided you some information there to get the help that you need. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it. Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.